Okay, we begin here, 10 lines down on Zayin Amud Aleph. The Gemara says, Yehochi, Rabbi Shmuel and Rabbi Akiva, B'mai debi idit nizak v'ziborit demazik plige. How do you know that the Melchloket revolves around this case in which the best property of the nizak is equal to the lowest property of the mazik? In that case, it's a Melchloket, whether b'shel mazik sheminon or b'shel nizak sheminon, which is what we've established until this point, that the machloket of Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Shmuel is whether the Meitav references the properties of the Nizak, which is the position of Rabbi Yishmael, that it's all governed by the property levels of the Nizak, and he's got to pay him Meitav Shel Nizak. Whereas Rabbi Akiva believes that it follows the Meitav Shel the Mazik. Obviously, the relevance of the Meitav Shel Mazik is in a case like this, where the Meitav of the Mazik far exceeds the Meitav of the Nizak. So in this case, you have Rabbi Shmuel saying that you go after the Nizak, and the Mazik only has to pay the Ziborit. On the other hand, Rabbi Akiva says that you go after the Mazik, even though it's far in excess of the Meitav of the Nizak. So how do you know that that's what they're arguing about? Dilma, b'dekulei amar b'nizak sheminan. Maybe everybody agrees that the Nizak is what we determine Meitav by. And v'halcha b'plugta Rabbi Shimon Menasi v'rabbonin kamiflegei. And maybe they're arguing about Hekdesh, about whether in the case of Hekdesh there's a kal v'chomer here, which tells you that by Hekdesh you have to pay Meitav, or you don't have to pay Meitav, or in essence, it's a more fundamental machloket, do you have to pay at all when it comes to Hekdesh? Because shor shel re'eyu v'lo shor shel Hekdesh, which means pay, you don't pay at all when you damage Hekdesh. Or do we learn like Rav Shimon Menasseh, which is shor shel re'eyu v'lo shor shel Hekdesh, just eliminates it from the differentiation made in the pasuk between tam and mu'ad, and says that for Hekdesh it's mu'ad mitchilato. So therefore, you could explain possibly the machloket here between Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Shmuel revolves around whether you are chayav to pay Hekdesh when you damage it or not. Rabbi Akiva savak Rabbi Shimon Menasseh. Rabbi Akiva holds like Rabbi Shimon Menasseh that you do pay when you damage Hekdesh. Rabbi Shmuel savak Rabbonon. Rabbi Shmuel holds like the Rabbonon. Where it says, Imkain, we have a number of questions then. We had a little braita that was brought before about what Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Shmuel held. The statements in that braita do not support an understanding in this manner, which is, my lo bakatuf. First of all, what does it mean that the posuk is only coming for this? As Rashi notes over here, mashem dekra gufei plige. Sounds like the posuk itself is what the machloket revolves around. So over here, the posuk of meitav sedeo, meitav karumo yushalem is not even relevant to their machloket, because they both agree that meitav comes from the nizak. They learn the gzeir shava like Rabbi Yishmael. Their machloket is vet hekdesh, which is shor shel re'eyu, how do you define, or what do you say about shor shel re'eyu? So then, what do you mean, lo baka tuvela? Rabbi Akiva, when he says, no, the pasuk's not for that, but it only comes to teach you this, they're not arguing in that pasuk of meitav sedeu meitav karmo yishalem. That's number one. Number two, v'od, my kal v'chomer l'ekdesh. What type of kal v'chomer to ekdesh do you have over here? Rashi claims the problem is that Rabbi Yishmael is clearly the kula, which is that a case that we brought up is the nafka mina between Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Shmuel is in a case where the ziborit, the worst level property of the mazik, equals the best property of the nizak. In that case, Rabbi Shmuel says you go after the nizak, and therefore he can pay a ziborit, whereas Rabbi Akiva says, no, you go after the mazik, and he's got to pay meitav. So Rabbi Akiva is a machmir, and Rabbi Shmuel is a mekil. So Rashi says, if Rabbi Akiva is holding like Rabbi Shmuel and going the kula, then how can you make a kal v'chomer off of a base that is the kula? And that the Gemara is saying now that Rabbi Shmuel and Rabbi Akiva have the same opinion. That means Rabbi Akiva is also mekil over here. And then you say, oh, kal v'chomer l'ekdesh after you're mekil by the hedyot. That doesn't make so much sense. Tosafot doesn't think that that's a good enough reason to say there's no kal v'chomer. Just because you're mekil here doesn't mean that hekdesh at least should be as chamur, or more chamur than a hedyot. Just depends. The machloket between Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Shmuel is simply about where the starting point is. Doesn't mean that you can't have a kal v'chomer l'ekdesh. And therefore, Tosafot explains this in a different manner and says, "Nir l'reid achi perusho my kal v'chomer l'ekdesh d'li'en chiyuva mazik v'ekdesh lo kamar da mikra the Rabbi Shimon afko elinyan meitav kamar." The law of the Rabbi Akiva that drew the Rabbi Shmuel kal v'chomer l'ekdesh came into Rabbi Shmuel hayam mudevekach ilam mishum depater le'gamrei. Rabbi Akiva's answer to Rabbi Shmuel is v'kal v'chomer le'egdesh. Now, Rabbi Shmuel does not fundamentally disagree with the kal v'chomer to egdesh. He agrees that you can make this kal v'chomer. His problem is that you have the word shor re'ehu. That says shor re'ehu v'joshir shel egdesh. So, as far as the kal v'chomer is concerned, the kal v'chomer works for Rabbi Shmuel. Why he rejects it is not because he thinks the kal v'chomer is wrong, but rather he rejects it because he has shor re'ehu v'lo shor shel egdesh. So that's what Tosfot says, it's v'od my kal v'chomer egdesh, because Rabbi Akiva says, oh, it's Rabbi Shmuel. And it's a kal v'chomer egdesh. You know what Rabbi Shmuel says back to him? You're right, it is a kal v'chomer egdesh. I just don't think egdesh is chayav. So the kal v'chomer is not relevant because I think that Hekdesh is not chayav. But had Hekdesh been chayav, he would have agreed fundamentally with that. So that's how Tosfot says the Gemara is rejecting it, because Rabbi Akiva's claim against Rabbi Shmuel is not a differentiation in their opinion. They both agree on the logic. They disagree whether it'll be applicable in this case. Ba'od, the current question, Amar Ravashi, this is really the slam dunk. Tanya Be'edya, we have an explicit braita that says, Meitav Sedeu Meitav Kamo Yishalim, Meitav shadehu shel nizak, umeitav karmo shel nizak, divi Rabbi Shmuel. So Rabbi Shmuel clearly thinks that the gzeira shava works here, and therefore it's meitav shadehu shel nizak. Akiva omer, meitav shadehu shel mazik, umeitav karmo shel mazik. Here you have Rabbi Akiva saying explicitly that he thinks that it is the meitav of the mazik. And so you see in this bright that they clearly argue over the point of whether it's nizak or the mazik. So for those three reasons, the Gemara goes back to its original assumption that the machlok between Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Shmuel is whether you follow the mazik or the nizak, not about this issue of hegdesh, whether they hold like Rabbi Shimon ben Asya or don't hold like Rabbi Shimon ben Asya. In Ochanami, Rabbi Akiva does hold like Rabbi Shimon ben Asya, but that's not the central tenet of the machlok between Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Shmuel. Their main machlok revolves around mazik and nizak. Now, whether you can then extrapolate to Hekdesh, what's meaning for Hekdesh, is a separate issue as to whether you hold like Rabbi Shimon Asi or not. For Rabbi Akiva, we know he definitely does. For Rabbi Shmuel, we don't have certainty as to what his position is. Rami Le Abaye the Rova. So Abaye brought up this problem to a Rova. Div Meitav Sedehu Meitav Karmo Yishalem. It says that Meitav in Midachrin Alo. It says you got to give the best and nothing else. Vat Anya. Don't we have a braita, yeshiv, the rabot, shaveh kesef, vafilu subin. It says yeshiv, in order to include cash equivalents, and even if you give him bran, or the discard of the grains that you are processing, that's good enough to pay him. So one pasuk seems to indicate you gotta give the best. The other pasuk says you can give as you please, whatever it is that you want, as long as it is a cash equivalent. So how do we reconcile between these psukim? Now, first of all, the pasuk that they're quoting, according to Rashi, is the pasuk by Chivtach Yishbor, Chichrei Yishbor, V'leichasenim, Nafal Shem Ashur HaChomor, Balabor Yishalem, Kesef, Yashiv LeBalav, V'Meiti Elo. So Rashi says over there that the word Yashiv is extraneous. It could have just said, Balabor Yishalem, Kesef LeBalav, V'Meiti Elo. What is Yashiv teach you there? They're both kol hashavot. It comes to include anything that returns or makes restitution to the person that was damaged. So yeshiv gives you the option to give whatever you choose. The other hand, the Rabbeinu Chananel over here says it comes out of the word peres yeshiv kol mash mishalem hamazik shavehi dibidei talo rachmanu tiv yeshiv. So the Rabbeinu Chananel says it's not because the word yeshiv is extraneous, but the fact is that yeshiv tells you have to return the money, but it puts it in your hands because it says yeshiv. You return the money, you make the decision as to how you return the money. That's what makes it that you have the ability to pay out of anything you want. When it says lokasha, kan midato, kan be'al korcho. Rashi reads, kan midato means that if the guy paid of his own volition. Kan be'al korcho is if the guy has to drag him to Beit Din in order for him to pay. So if he pays of his own volition, he can pay as he chooses. If he goes to Beit Din, then already we're going to force him to pay cash, or we're going to force him to pay Meitav, because it's got to be the closest thing to cash. Others say, wait, you have to go to Beit Din anyway, because you have to assess the value, whether it's the damage or that which he's trying to make compensation with. Therefore, kan midato means as if he listens to the psak Beit Din. Kan bal kocho is when he doesn't abide by the psak of Beit Din, and then they have to come and foreclose on him. Once they're going to already foreclose on him, they're going to take kesef from him. or we're going to force him to pay metav. It says there that you have to pay even against your will. Metav sadehu, metav karmo, yishalem. Over there, it sounds like someone's going to compel him to make that payment. It doesn't say that he will be made to pay, which would mean baal korcho. It says yishalem, ketiv midato mashma. Yishalem sounds like he can do it of his own volition. So now, you don't have a diuk out of the pasuk. He wanted to medayek from the fact that it says yishalem versus yashiv, which is yashiv seems to give him an open opportunity to pay with what he likes or how he likes. Yishalem seems to indicate that he has to pay baal korcho. A buyer rejects that and says the word is not yishulam, but rather yishalem. Yishalem is also midato. He pays. He pays the way that he wants to pay. Whereas yishulam would mean that he was compelled to pay, or he was made to pay the money, and that would indicate baal korcho. So that can't be the explanation over here. So Gemara says, El amar abayu kedemar. This is the way to reconcile over here. The Tanya, Harei shayulo batim sadot vichramim. He has lots of assets. He has houses, fields, vineyards. Veinu motzei lemochran. And he doesn't have the ability to liquidate his assets. So he has net worth, but he is what we call house poor. He owns plenty of assets, but he can't liquidate them. So he has a liquidity crisis where he can't make payments, even though he has a net worth that is sufficient to cover his outstanding debts or what he needs. Now Tosafot points out over here, when we say batim, we don't mean that his courthouse, I mean, this is like the Homestead Act in Florida, which is your house is not counted towards your net worth because it's seen as a basic necessity. And therefore, when we're talking about batim here, we're talking about batim in excess of his living space. Then, machilin oto maserani ad mechza. We feed him maserani until one half. So the exact scenario or the exact case here is not clear. Rashi brings two interpretations. The first of which is, this individual is an ani. He's a poor person, but the threshold for being a poor person in order to accept Maaser Ani is 200 zuz. So now he has batim sadot in kramim. Beinu motzo lemochran. If he sells them now, he can't garner the 200 zuz that they are worth. And therefore he is deemed to be an ani because his assets, even though seemingly they're worth more than 200 zuz, but when he goes to liquidate them in the market, he's unable to get that price, and that means now his threshold, he's below the threshold of 200 zuz, and therefore he can get maser ani ad mechza. So Rashi says, what does it mean ad mechza? Ad shaveh mea zuz. We pay him up to 100 zuz, and then the remaining property he'll sell for 100 zuz, because there's a belief that the value of the property in the fields will never drop more than 50% of their value. So whatever their current value is, he could at least liquidate them for 50% of that face value. And since he could liquidate them for 50% of his face value, we plug the hole by giving him maser ani for the other 100. I'm going to read it that way, and then we'll come back and read it with the alternate explanation. Vavi bamar, and mar asked the question, whenever you're dealing with a baye, mar means his rebbe, his adom, which is rabba. Because rabba was both his foster father as well as his rebbe. Whenever he uses the term mar, he's referencing to Rabba. Hey chidami, what exactly is the scenario? Ihu zal arato de kuliamo. If the prices of land dropped for everyone, v'didei namizal be'adayu, and the price of his property dropped in sync with the rest of the market, afilu tuva nami lisfulei, then you should give him as much as he needs here because he has now dropped below the 200 zuz net worth. Dazol de kuliyama nami, because everybody else's property also fell along with it, and that means his net worth is no longer 200 zuz. If you're below 200 zuz, you can collect as much maaser ani as you want. As long as you're below the 200 threshold, you can get as much as you want. They should give him as much as he needs. Ella, the case is de uker arata de kuliyama. The prices of land appreciated for everyone. Didei aidi dal benafika zuzei zal arei. But he, because he's trying to liquidate in a fire sale, the value of his property now has dropped. So technically his property is worth more, but because he's under duress, people are lowering the price that they're willing to pay because they know that he needs the cash. Then, afilu purta nami lo lisfele. We shouldn't give him anything. Because the underlying worth of his property is 200 zuz, and he's over the threshold, and therefore he doesn't deserve to get more of this. Vamamar Allah. And Rabba says, no, this is the explanation of the case. Lotricha, d'biyomin nisa n'yakra arata, that during the springtime, the prices of the fields appreciate. B'yomin zidishrei zalarata. During the planting season, the property prices drop. Anybody else in a normal circumstance would wait until the spring season and sell it at the higher price. So here, this guy, since he's under duress, needs the money now, has to sell at the current prices. Up to a 50% discount is reasonable, or could be the amount he has to discount it to move the property. Below that amount, there is not that type of depreciation in the changes from season to season. And therefore, we plug the hole up to 50%, but no more than that, because that's not a reasonable amount, or not something that would be practical, because it won't happen. So the way that Rashi describes it over here, and the way that we explained it, is that you have an individual, an ani, who is on the precipice of crossing that 200 zuz level, but because of the circumstances that he drops below. At first we thought the possibility that everybody's property dropped in value. We said if that's the case, once he's below the 200 threshold, he can take even 1,000 zuz in one shot. I mean that if you gave him 1,000 zuz, he'd be over the threshold now, but that's fine. As long as he's below the threshold, you can give him as much money as you want, and his land is now below the threshold of everybody's land depreciated. Just as a note, in the Gemara in Sotah, we saw that what's a person who is a Rasha Arum, somebody who's terrible, is an individual who knows an ani has 199 zuz, and then he goes and gives him one zuz, because then he puts him over the threshold and he can't collect anymore. If he left him at 199, he could take a big check from Maiser Ani, and that would be fine, because what brings him over the threshold could be a large amount. But if you go give him a small amount, then you've hurt his ability, or inhibited his ability to collect. But that's when everybody's property goes down. On the other hand, if everybody's property is rising, and his property is not rising because he's trying to liquidate it, in some senses, it's his fault that he's liquidating the property. The property inherently is worth more than 200 zuz, and therefore he's not an ani, he shouldn't collect from Maiser Ani. So Rabba solves the problem and says, no, that in Nisan, which is right after the harvest, people sell lands then at their normal or appreciated prices, because that gives whoever buys it the chance to prep it for the next planting season and to use it in the next planting season. On the other hand, if you're trying to sell in Tishrei, it's too short a time for the person to prep the land and to actually plant it in that year. That means that it's going to lay fallow for a year. So whoever's going to buy the property is going to discount the fact that they're going to have to sit on the land for a year and not be able to use it. So this guy, because he's under duress, has to sell during the fall instead of during the spring, and therefore he's going to have to take a discount on the land. And that's what we're saying here. We're going to help him to plug that discount between the two times. Tosafot over here points out that that distinction in seasons makes sense when you're talking about land. But when you're talking about houses, like we mentioned before, why should it matter whether it's the spring or the fall? So Tosafot says that there's also a season for rentals. The standard rentals begin in the spring or in the early summer. And since that's the case, it's much easier to sell or rent at the beginning of the year or in the springtime than it is when you're trying to do it in the fall time because you're off season. Since you're off season, you're going to garner less for it. Even with houses, that's not just true about sadot. Rashi then brings a second alternative, and he says, Lishna Achrina. Lishna Achrina is also followed by the Rif and others, but there are many girsaot when it comes to this other version about what exactly happens, which is this. Machilno to my serni ad mechsa, lav anikoi. It's not talking about a poor person. Ella akol adam, shitzarich ma'ot limizonot. This is a talking about a regular guy, an ashir, who needs money, and he needs to liquidate. Vayulo batim sadot bichramim. He has assets, veino motzei limkor, but he's stuck in a liquidity crisis and he can't sell them. Afilu bechazid mehem, even up to 50%, he can't even get the 50% mark on these numbers. Vachinoto maserni achi yakru karotav shuchol machron bechazid mehem. We feed him, we give him maserani until he can sell at the 50% watermark. So this is a shear, a regular guy. He's got plenty of net worth. He's worth 1,000 zuz, 2,000 zuz, 3,000 zuz, doesn't really matter. But right now he has no ability to garner mizunot because it's all tied up in illiquid assets. So he has a net worth, but his net worth can't be realized because he's stuck in illiquid assets. So we tell him, go sell the property. So he goes and tries to sell the property, and people are offering him 40% of the value. At that point, we say to him, okay, we're not going to force you to sell into a illiquid market when you are below the 50% threshold. So that's what it says, is that if he can realize his net worth by selling and he'll garner 50% of his net worth, he's not entitled to Maaser Ani. If he has to discount below that amount, then he is entitled to Maaser Ani, which is basically saying that if it's a reasonable discount, we're going to compel him to take the discount. They consider a reasonable discount up to 50%. Below that amount, they don't consider it reasonable anymore. And therefore, since it's below that amount, we basically bridge him, give him a bridge. Now, this is a machlokes in Rishonim. Is it a bridge loan or is it a bridge donation to him? Meaning that we give him Maaser Ani without any expectation of repayment, or we give him Maaser Ani to tie him over and then he pays it back when he's able to garner the net worth. That's one of the machlokot in the Girsaot here. And then we try to tie him over until he can liquidate at the 50% point. That's the way Rashi explains it. Others explain it that it has nothing to do with the 50% point, but rather that we give him money until he can get back to the full value of his property. Ad mechza, the way the Rambam reads it, which is very difficult, says until half of his net worth. We give him Maaser Ani until half of his net worth. And then we say, okay, that's enough, you've taken enough, but we give it up to half of his net worth, and then he can sell it whenever he reaches the price that he wants. The 50% discount that we're speaking about, interestingly, Rashi notes it over here, even though Rashi doesn't hold this way, Tosafot does hold this way, which is there ona'ah by karkot? The Gemara says, and we learn this in Bava Metziah, that ain't ona'ah by karkot. There's no such thing as overcharging or undercharging by property, because property has such a subjective value that there's no such thing. Rashi believes that means there is no ona'ah. Exactly what the Gemara says, no ona'ah. Tosafot says, based on the Yerushalmi, that ain't ona'ah l'karkot only means up to 50%. That's considered to be not ona'ah, because that's considered to be a reasonable differential in subjective pricing on property. If you exceed 50%, then that is ona'ah. So the 50% that we're speaking about here in terms of taking discounts of the property matches that idea of ona'ah, which is that if you're asked to take a 50% discount on the property, that's reasonable, because that's not ona'ah, that is a reasonable differential in pricing. If it exceeds that amount, that's not considered to be a reasonable amount of differential, and that's why this 50% is very crucial here in terms of how much he has to discount the property in order to sell it. Again, now, the Rif explains like the second Lashon and Rashi, but then he has the opposite Girsa in the Gemara, which is that if everybody's property went down in value, then we force him to sell it and say, it's your problem, because you're not losing money here. You're not taking a discount here because of your particular circumstance. You're taking a discount here because the market prices have dropped. So if market prices have dropped, we say sell it and get whatever the market is willing to offer you. On the other hand, if it is that everybody else's property has gone up and you're having problems because you're trying to liquidate into a market and everybody knows you, they have you trapped, in that case, we will give you, my sir, and we should give him even more in order to bridge him through, because it's not his fault. I mean that the drop in value of his property is not because of the market value drop, but rather it has to do with the fact that he's trying to liquidate. And in that case, we'll offer him a bridge to get him through this in order to survive the issue. So according to Rashi in the second Lashon, you'll give him as much as he needs when the entire market price went down is because it wasn't his fault. The market prices went down, and that's what's causing him the difficulty in selling his property. And therefore, we're going to give him Maaser Ani until he can sell his property at their full value. But in the case where everybody else's property is gone up in value and his hasn't, that's his fault because he's trying to sell it too forcefully into the market. And that's what causes the discount. And therefore, we're not going to give him anything because he could sell it now and still be above the 200 zuz threshold. On the other hand, the Tosafot has inside of the Rif, the opposite Girsa. And therefore, he says in a case where everybody's property went down in price, over there, we won't give him anything because that's the market price now. And his market price that he'll fetch for this property is above the 200 zuz threshold. So he's not a nani. And that's the going market price. We're going to force him to sell it into the market at that market price. On the other hand, if everybody else's prices went up and his didn't go up because people think he's poor, over there, we'll give him as much as he needs to bridge him over until the time that he can actually sell them at their full value, because in this case, the differential in price is being caused by perception in the market, not by the realities of what his field is worth, and therefore we'll give him Eiser Ani until he can get back to the full value. Now the nafka mina between these two explanations will be if an individual can sell his property for 200 zuz, but at greater than a 50% discount. Do we force him to sell his property in that case? So it depends. According to Rashi's first explanation about Maiser Ani, you need to be Ani in order to garner the Maiser Ani. And so therefore, if you're a Shear, because you can get 200 zuz and you can liquidate it for that, we're not going to give you any money in that case. Since you can get your 200 zuz, it doesn't bother me that it's more than a 50% discount, but you still have a net worth that exceeds 200 zuz. We're going to tell you, sell your property and get the money. You won't need Maiser Ani. On the other hand, according to the second interpretation, where we're talking about an Ashir, in that case, we won't compel you to sell because it's below the 50% threshold. And that's the cases where we're going to give you a bridge loan, or we're going to give you Maiser Ani to carry you through, is to get you from the below 50% discount to a normal 50% discount. And that might be the answer to the question here, which is, there is a fair assumption of market fluctuations and market values. And in that case, we're going to tell the person, you're on your own. On the other hand, when it comes to a case where it exceeds 50%, it means that people are taking advantage of this person, because his discount is relative to the other parties in the market or the other market prices that can be garnered. It's not a sense here where the whole market fell apart and now he's in trouble, because then that is his problem. The case here is where people know that he has to get liquid assets, and therefore they're taking advantage of him. And so what we're willing to do is give him Maiser Ani so that he doesn't get taken advantage of, which means more than a 50% discount, and that seems reasonable. We're not taking people out of their decisions. We're not saying, listen, you know, you made a bad decision, therefore we're going to make you whole on that decision. The fact is that he's trapped, and what we're trying to do is take him out of that liquidity trap so that he doesn't have to take such a large discount on his property, and that seems to be reasonable, because otherwise he's taking discounts that far exceed a normal market discount. And remember, it's 50%. This is a big haircut before we start giving him Maiser Ani, if you believe that it's talking about an Ashir. So again, here you have two Pshatim in Rashi. The Rif has the opposite Girsa in the Gemara than Rashi's Girsa. And then you also have the Rambam, which was an even more extreme, which is that you give him up to half of his net worth to carry him through, versus just half of the amount, meaning that either 50% according to Rashi in the Ani case, 50%, which is 100 zuz, or you give him Maiser Ani until the discount is only 50% of the face value, market value of the property. What does that have to do with what we're speaking about? Right? He brought in something that seems totally disconnected from what we're speaking about. And then he says, oh, v'achanami gabi nizakim. So too over here, by nizakim, dinei bi'idit. Also by nizakim, that's the same thing by idit. This is how we're going to explain the psukim, that in Yomei Nisan, in the springtime, his land is worth more money. And in Tishrei, it's worth less money. And he did damage in the fall. And now he's got to make reparations in the fall, and he's got to give him Edit. Is he giving him the Edit based on the current market value in Tishrei? Or is he giving him Edit based on the market value that will be in Nisan? This is a standard market fluctuation. I mean that every Tishrei, it's going to be worth, let's say, 20% less than it's worth in Nisan. He waits till Nisan, he'll get full market. He goes next to Shrei, it'll be down 20%. It's just a natural fluctuation in the market that happens just because of seasons. It's a seasonal fluctuation in the market. So in that case, Viyamarle, so if he says to him, Iu havli benonit tfei porta, says to him, listen, give me a little more benonit. The individual, the Nizak, says, instead of paying me Edit, I'll take your middle level property, but I'll take a little more of it. Obviously, you need to get to the same value. You'd have to give more benunit than idit. Amarle, the mazik can say to him, ish shakal kedinach, if you take what the Torah gives you, shokal kedash, take like the current price. Vilo shakal kiyukra dulekame. If not, you're going to have to take it based on the futures price, based on the price in the spring. What he's saying to him is, listen, you're entitled to meitav, you're entitled to idit. So if you take the idit currently, I'm going to give you the edit based on the current market price, which is a discount, the 20% discount. If you're asking from me something that you're not entitled to, you're entitled to edit. If you want Beinonit, you want something else, all right, we're going to do it on my terms. My terms are that you take it based on the value in the spring, not on the value now. And that's the difference between the, how you explain the two psukim. When it says, Meitav Sadehu, Meitav Karmo Yishalem, that is, you get the best, and you get it at the current prices. You get the best, the edit property, based on today's prices. Yashiv, which says you can pay him whatever you want, that means that you give him the value, but that value you can base on the value that will take place in the spring, not necessarily the value now in the fall, because he's asking for something that he's not necessarily entitled to, and you're paying him. Now, when you're paying him, you can choose the value by which we set the price as being Nisan instead of Tishrei. So, Matkiv la Ravacha bar Yaakov, Imkein orata kochan shel nizakim. He says, wait a minute, if that's the case, you've now hurt the Nizak. The Nizak ben Torah is entitled to Edit. If he wants Benonit or Ziborit, which in a sense is a Kula, which is that he's saying to the guy, listen, I'll take the lower quality property, then why should he be disadvantaged when he takes Benonit or Ziborit? The Torah grants him Edit because it wants him to get the best and the most liquid of assets. So that means that the Torah upgraded his claim over here. If they upgraded his claim, why can't he take then Benonit or Ziborit, which is the lesser of those qualities, and he would then be, in some ways, is impinging on his own rights to take something greater, so he's willing to take Benonit, he's willing to take Ziborit. In that case, why should he be penalized for taking Benonit and Ziborit when he's entitled to Edit? Now, the reason why he might want to take Benonit or Ziborit is because, for instance, he has land adjacent to that. This guy has property, and he has land adjacent that's Benonit. The land that's Edit is far away. For him, it's worth taking the Benonit and Ziborit because it joins up with his current land. So there are reasons, there are cases where he might want to take Benonit to Ziborit over the Edit. And Rav Acha Yaakov says, you can't say that because now you've hurt him instead of helped him. You gave him the right to Edit, but if you give him the right to Edit and not to Benonit and Ziborit, in some ways, you've actually made his claim worse than it was before. The Rachman Amar mi Meitav, the Torah says he can take from Meitav, Ba'amarit mi Benonit to Ziborit namilo. And then you're telling us he can't take from Beinonit to Ziborit? The Torah gives him the right to Meitav, which is the best. Obviously, it gives him the right to something that's of lower value, and he can make the decision. Now, whose decision this is, actually turns out to be a machloket between the Rosh and Rashi over here. So let's even say here where we conclude that Meitav, Edit, Benonit and Ziborit are all on the same level, and he would take them at the current prices. Who gets to make the determination as to whether we pay out of Edit, Benonit, or Ziborit? Rashi in E. Amarle says, El Pshita, di bay nizak de mishkal subim shakil bar kocho shel mazik. Shafilu bi Edit, yafe kocho, ko shakim bi Benonit. So Rashi over here says, the nizak has a right to take whatever he wants against the will of the mazik. When the Torah gives him the right to take Meitav or Edit, that means that he has an upgraded right to demand that. But if he doesn't want that, he can demand or he can take whatever he wants. He could say, I want Benonit, I want Ziborit. He is the one who gets the choice in determining what the Mazik pays. On the other hand, the Rosh writes that you can't compel the Mazik to pay. Aval imamar kargazo chaviv alai, if he says that this is my favorite property, Beni will say that Nelach Klau, and I don't want to give it to you. Lo kaifin and lay. We do not compel him. Sharei kol mashu mutal alav lifroa. Whatever he has to pay, ben the nizakim, ben the balchov, ben the k'tubat isha, ipara lefi dato. He pays it based on his own decision, but only fi data gova, and not based on the one who's coming to collect. Lo lam in kofin the meshalem nitem nechasim elamash libo chafetz. V'vad shodo yifchot lo medino. As long as he doesn't downgrade him from what he's entitled to, min. Whether it's for the Nizakim from Edit or Balchov from Benonit or Ktobeshit Isha b'Ziborit. But he gets to choose which property or which items he wants to use to for payment. The Mazik gets to make the determination. The Nizak can ask for whatever he wants, but in the end it's the Mazik who determines whether you are paid or you're not paid. So then, according to the Rosh, who says it's all up to the Mazik, why does the Gemara over here conclude that If the Nizak wants to take Benunit to Ziborit, he can take Benunit to Ziborit. So the Rosh has to explain that. I mean, Rashi believes that the Nizak is the one who gets to make the determination. Now you understand the Gemara. The Torah empowered him to take Metav if he wants. If he doesn't want to, he takes Benunit Ziborit. That's what the Gemara says. The Gemara says the Nizak is the one who gets to make the choice, and the Torah empowered him to take the best. The Rosh, who says that it's all up to the Mazik, what he pays, then what's the Gemara saying over here, that it's up to the Nizak? He's given the right to take Meitav, he doesn't want Meitav, he takes Benunit Ziborit. What do you mean? It's still up to the Mazik in the end. So what the Rosh says is that once the Mazik says, I'm willing to offer you Benunit in the Nissan price, but not on the price today, what he says is Giladato, he already made it clear that he's willing to have this property be the liquidated damages for the Nezek that he had done. Once he's Megaladato that that's the case, then we say this guy is willing to give up this property, and now it's in the pool of items that the Nizak can choose from. As the Rosh writes, V'nir Ali, Dafkut Gamerle, Ibait the Mishkal Benonit Viziborit, Kayukra de la Kameh Yavinelach, the cave in the Gali Date, the Titalo, Mitzela Kachat, Kayukra de Kameh, Tzurik Nidalo, Kizola de Hashto. That's only because he put it into the bucket now that we can compel him to give it up based on today's prices. Cave in shame bedatola, cave lat smoke, because he has no intent to keep in the land for himself. The fact that he's offering it shows you that he's willing to use that as the payment vehicle. So the mazik gets to determine what goes into the bucket of items for which the nizak can choose from. But how do we know what's in the bucket? What he offers him. If he just offers him idit, then that's all he offers him. If he offers him benonit based on the future price, then we say to him, too bad. There is no such thing as future price. He gets it at today's price. But the fact that you already offered up the benonit shows that you are willing to give up this asset as the cash equivalent. That means it's in the bucket now, and the nizak can make the decision as to whether to take your benonit or your idit based on the current prices. So for the Rosh, the mazik has to put in play whatever it is that he's willing to give. Otherwise, he can determine what it is. If he puts it in play, then the nizak gets to determine which of those items that he takes out of those items that the mazik put in play. Rashi believes that it's the nizak himself who gets that right. If you want to compare this case in Maaser Ani, you should compare it to the case of a creditor-debtor situation. The Baal Chov has a right to collect out of middle-class property, middle-quality property. He goes to the debtor and says, listen, I'll take your lower-class property, your lower-quality property. I'll just take more of it in order to make up the deficit in the repayment. I'm late. And the debtor says to him, Ishakalt kedinach shkode ashto. If you take based on what you're supposed to get, which is benonit, then you'll get the current prices, which is the discounted prices in the fall. Vilo, if not, shakuki yukra de la kameh. I'm going to force you to take it based on the prices in Nissan. If you want Ziborit, you'll take it based on the prices in Nissan. That's the case. You're going to close down the market for liquidity. He can say to the debtor, if I had cash in hand right now, I could buy property at current prices in the market. Now that my money's tied up with you, I have to take the prices in Nissan. I'm going to actually get hurt by the fact that you have my money. And even though he may not be able to buy this land in particular, because who says that this debtor is going to sell this land anyway, even if he had the cash, doesn't mean that he could have bought the land. Either you have to say that he could have bought something equivalent to it, or he knows that the debtor is going to sell this land or wants to sell this land, and therefore having cash would be to his advantage versus being stuck in a relationship with this individual where now he's going to be charged based on the future value rather than the current value. So what we're trying to do, and that's true in all these issues of creditor-debtor relations, is balance between the creditor being willing to lend because he has enough collateral and proper collateral. On the other hand, we don't want him taking advantage of the debtors and lending money because he knows then he can take away from the debtors things that he wants. Technically, the creditor is only entitled to Ziborit Min HaTorah, the worst quality property. We'll see that later on in today's daf and tomorrow's daf. The Chachamim upgraded him to get Benonit because they wanted to keep liquidity in the market, which is that if the lenders know that if the guy defaults, they're going to get the worst quality property, and it's going to be hard for them to liquidate, they're going to shut down the market. They're not going to lend anymore because it's not worth it to them. So what the Chamin did was upgraded it to Beinonit. So they said, listen, we'll give you middle-class property, middle-quality property, so that way you're willing to lend. We're not going to give you Idit, because then it looks like you're taking advantage. You're lending to people knowing that you're going to get their best of their property. That could be abused. Ziborit, we're not going to give you, because we know that's not so appealing if you're lending money. So we give you Beinonit. So now, what Rav Acha Brei Ravika says, listen, the fact that we gave him Beinonit is to his advantage. But if it, right now it's to his advantage to take Ziborit, why should he be penalized for taking Ziborit over Beinonit? Because he'll look at this and say, listen, had I had cash, I could make my own decision. I could take Ziborit, I could take Beinonit, I could take whatever I want, and I get today's prices. Why are you forcing me to take tomorrow's prices, I mean Nissan prices, just because I'm taking Ziborit instead of Beinonit? The guy will say, I'm not lending money anymore. That's it. Because every time my money's tied up with these guys, I lose out. I have to pay future prices instead of today's prices. And therefore, you would not make such a determination. Ella, Amar Rav Acha Brei D'Ravika, Iga L'Dmuye L'Ktubat Tisha Midaminan. If you want to compare it, you compare it to Ktubat Tisha, because Ktubat Tisha is at the bottom of the barrel. In terms of claims, the Nezek comes out of Idit, the Baal Chov comes out of Beinonit, the middle stuff. Ktubat Tisha only has a claim on Ziborit, on the worst level property that the individual has. So at this point, there's no property that you can't go lower because you're at the bottom of the barrel. The Gemara explained to us why that is, because Yoter Mesha Ish Rotzeh Lisa Isha Rotzeh Linaseh. That more than the man wants to get married, the woman wants to get married, and therefore she is willing to accept collateral that is Ziborit, and that will not be a deterrent for her getting married. So for that reason, Ktubat Isha is taken out of the Ziborit. So Ktubat Isha Dinabi Ziborit. The proper din is that she collects out of Ziborit. If she says to the ex-husband, give me Beinonit, butzer pruta, that's a little less, meaning give me better quality property, but that less of it, less quantity of it. Amrala, listen, if you take what you're entitled to get, which is Ziborit, then you get the price today. Otherwise, take it based on the future price, because over here, she's demanding an upgrade in quality. In the case of the Baal Chov and the case of the Nizak, both of them were asking for a downgrade in quality. So the Gemara says, why should we disadvantage them if they're asking for a downgrade in quality? Over here, the Ktubat Tisha is already at the bottom of the barrel. If she's asking for something, she's asking for an upgrade in quality. Over there, he can say to her, you want an upgrade in quality, then you got to take it based on the spring prices, not the fall prices. And that's a fair assumption. She could take the Ziborit right now and get what she's entitled to. If she's already demanding better quality and taking less quantity, then he can say that's based on the price in the spring. I'm not going to give it based on the price today. So that is an answer to, or that is the comparison to that case in Maaser Ani. That is a similar type of case. Tosfot does note that you could have said the same answer with regards to a Baal Chov if the Baal Chov asked for an upgrade instead of a downgrade. Just like by Ktubat Tisha, where she's asking for an upgrade, we say to her, now you're subject to the Nissan pricing. I said the same thing to a Baal Chov who asked for Idit, which is also an upgrade for him. By Ktubat Tisha, it's easier just to say it because everything is an upgrade for her. Whereas Baal Chov, it'll depend. If he asks for Idit, then we'll say he's got to take like the future prices. Whereas if he asks for Ziborit, which is a downgrade, then he should be able to garner the current prices for asking for a Ziborit. That might be why the Gemara favored Ktubat Tisha. Mikol Mokom Kasha. That's very nice, but you didn't solve now the problem of Yashiv versus Meitav. One pasuk says you have to give the best, the other one says you can give whatever you please. That we didn't solve. We tried to solve it by comparing to this Mishnah. We rejected that and said, no, that's comparison is more to Ktubat Tisha. But now how do we resolve this distinction in the Psukim? Again, before we say Midato Mibal Korcho, but the Gemara says that it wasn't Miduyak out of the Lashon, and therefore the Gemara seemingly rejected that answer. Samarava Kodi Ayivle. Whatever you pay must be Meitav. Meitav Sadeh Uktiv. Wait a minute. It says Meitav Sadeh. When it comes to fields, you pay Meitav. You can't say whatever you give out of Meitav. In that Yeshiv means give. And then Meitav tells you whatever you give, it'll be the best. So if you decide to pay from brand, give the best brand. You decide to give animals, give the best animal. You decide to give land, give the best land. So that's the way Rava is trying right now to reconcile this and say, yeshiv means pay with whatever cash equivalent you like. Meitav tells you that it's qualified. Just give the best of whatever you choose. Gemara says that doesn't make sense. The Pesuk says Meitav Sadeyu. It's very particular about what you have to give Meitav from. That's only by land. It's not true by other cash equivalents. Ella. Kiata Rapapa Ravuna Breda Rav Shua Mi Bei Rav. For Shua, they explain this. Kol Milei Meitavu. Every item is considered to be Meitav. When it comes to cash equivalents are exactly that. Cash equivalents. You can give whatever you want, whether it's bran, cotton, wool. You can give them whatever it is, flax, beer, wine, whatever you give them, that's all Meitav. Dilo mizdaben hacha, mizdaben b'mata achrita. Because if you don't can't sell it here, you can just move it to a location where you can sell it. These assets, they're easily liquidated in some place. So obviously assuming a reasonable distance from where you are, if he can't sell them in this town, he can walk to the next town and they need it, so they'll buy it from him. On the other hand, the bar, miaro, with the exception of land, delay tivlei mimeta, very must give the best, keche delikwa zalaz bina, in order that people jump on it in order to buy it. Land is not mobile. Land can't be moved. You can only sell land where it is. So what we want to do is give the individual liquidity when we're paying for it. So the only way to give them liquidity is to give them the highest quality land, which moves the fastest. So, and other items, by definition, they're Meitav, because the definition of Meitav is not necessarily the best, but the definition of the Meitav is the most liquid. You're really obligated to pay this individual cash, and to give him money. You can't pay cash, so we're offering you alternatives. The alternatives have to be the closest thing to cash. The cash equivalents must be the closest thing to cash. Buy Metzaltlin, buy any other item. What we're saying is it has liquidity and it can be made into cash very quickly. If it's not here, if I, you know, down the road in the next town, you'll be able to do it. Or you go the other direction, you'll be able to do it there. There's a way to always liquidate it and make it into cash equivalents. By land, that is not true because it's in a liquid asset. By definition, it's a liquid asset. So what we want you to do there is give the best of the property so it's the most cash equivalent. And the only way to do that is if you use Meitav. And so that's why it only asks for Meitav in particular when it deals with Sadot, when it deals with land, but when it's dealing with Metaltalin, then everything is deemed to be Meitav. Right now the Gemara says, Bamine Rav Shmuel bar Abba mi Akronaya mi Rabbi Abba kashen shamin. They do the assessment of the land, b'shalohen shamin u'b'shalolam hen shamin. How do they do the assessment? When we say that you have the best quality, middle quality, lower quality, is that subjective? I mean, it's the relative quality of the land that he is holding. Or is it based on some objective standard, which is, in the world, what is looked at as high quality, middle quality, and low quality property? The Maharshal explains the difference between Bishalohim Shamin versus Bishalolam Him Shamin, based on what is the purpose of Meitav Sadeyu, giving the best of the land. Is the reason we want to give Meitav is so that it engenders liquidity. If that's the case, then idit shel olam, the standard idit of the world, should be sufficient to garner that liquidity. On the other hand, if we say that, what we're trying to do is say that we have cash, which is the primary way to repay the nezek, and we have cash equivalents. And the closer those cash equivalents are to cash, the better an asset it is. And the Torah wants you to give the closest thing to cash. And therefore, we might assess it based on your idit, which is that even though your idit far exceeds the idit of the olam, and there's plenty of liquidity in the idit of the olam, we want you to give your own idit, because that's even more liquid and more like cash. And so therefore, we're going to compel you to do it. It does belie an underlying assumption that when you do b'shalohen shamin, his idit will exceed the idit of the olam. The possibility is it might be the opposite, where the idit of the olam is in excess of his idit, and then what the Marshal suggests over here would not be a feasible explanation for the difference. Aliba the Rabbi Shmuel lo tibaylach. According to Rabbi Shmuel, that is no question, because the Amar ben Nizak Sheminan, since he says you assess it based on the Nizak, therefore it's clear that b'shalohim shamin, that it has to do with him. Because what Rabbi Shmuel says is b'dinizak Sheminan, b'dinizak means that we are makil on you. If we're going to be makil on you, then certainly we shouldn't be assessing it based on the world standard, the objective standard. We're obviously being makil because we're saying, look at the Nizak, and let us see what is the best property of the Nizak. And the best property of the Nizak is below the level of the lowest property of the Mazik. We give the Mazik the ability to give a Nizak that property. So according to Rabbi Shmuel, the fact that he mentions Nizak already means that he's going to Kula. And he's going to Kula, it's clear that it must be Bishalohein Shamin, because that's the only way that you're really going to get a Kula. Tosafot says that the reason is because Rabbi Shmuel learns it out of Gzeirah Shavah. So the Gzeirah Shavah makes it into a Gzeirah HaKatuv, which says that it's the Nizak, and that means Nizak through and through. It's the Nizak's property, and it's Bishalohein Shamin. And so the Gzeirah Shavah is determinant. It's from the Nizak. From the Nizak means everything to do with the Nizak. It's made of Karmo, of the Nizak, and it's also relative to his own properties. So that's why we don't have any question about Rabbi Shmuel's position, whereas for Rabbi Akiva, we don't have it being a Gzeirah Shavah, but rather the interpretation of the Pasuk. And now we see from that there are two ways to interpret it. Is it his property versus the Nizak's property, or is it his property versus everybody's property? And that will determine whether it's Shalosh Hin Shamin or Ba'olam Hin Shamin. On the other hand, Ki Dibayla Chalibi to Rabbi Akiva, Damar B'Mazik Shamina. According to Rabbi Akiva, who says the Mazik Shamina. Now, there are some who say that the reason that Rabbi Shmuel got a question, because he explicitly said Benizak. Since he said Benizak, it makes it sound like Bishalohein Shamin. Rabbi Akiva, in the Braita, did not say Bimazik. He gave a much more cryptic statement, and therefore it opens it up. Or you can explain in the words of Rabbi Akiva that it means Bishalolam, and that would not be difficult. According to Rabbi Shmuel, who says explicitly Benizak, it's much harder to explain that we're talking about Bishalolam. The problem is that once we brought the Braita from Rashi, where Rabbi Akiva explicitly says that B'mazik Shamina, and you'd have the same problem for Rabbi Akiva. So therefore, many say that this question only came before that Braita of Ravashi. Once you have the Braita of Ravashi, then it makes it clear, seemingly clear that according to Rabbi Shmuel and Rabbi Akiva, you're going after the personal levels of property of these individuals and not the objective levels. So now, according to Rabbi Akiva, Damar Mazik Shamina, my Meitav Sedeo Marachmana, the Meute de Nizak, is the reason it says Meitav Seo is to exclude that of Nizak. Odilma Limute the Alma Nami, or is it coming to exclude the properties of others? Meaning that when you say Meitav Sedeo the Mazik, does that mean Mazik to the exclusion of the Nizak? Or does it mean Mazik to the exclusion of the whole world? Which just means that it's all based on his own relative property, nothing to do with the outside world. Or is it simply his property versus the Nizak's property, but his property will be determined by what the standard is in the world. So that's what the question is. The Torah says, Meitav Sadehu, and you're telling me it's Bishalolam Hein Shamin? Sounds like it's his field, and it's determined by his fields. His fields mean literally his fields and not the standard out there, objective standard out there. He gave an answer, which is that it's clearly Bishalolam Hein Shamin. Now we're going to challenge that and say, is that really true? Because we have a Braita that seems to indicate otherwise. Which is the Braita now says that when you have three creditors coming, one creditor is a true creditor, which is that he's owed money. He collects from Beinoni property. One creditor is because he was damaged. This guy owes him for damage that he did to him. He gets to collect that of the Edit. There's a woman, his ex-wife, who's coming to make a claim here, and she's entitled to Ziborit, the low-end property. Depending on what property he has, then we make a determination of where they collect from. So that's what the nature of this price is. Etave. And the other Edit. If the guy only has Edit property, then kulam govim mina Edit. Then everybody collects that Edit. There's no choice. Benonit, kulam govim mi benonit. If there's only middle-range property, everybody collects out of the middle-range property. Ziborit, kulam govim ziborit. You can't, then everybody takes from the worst quality property. So you can't, or what everybody agrees about here, is we don't force the guy to go out and buy property to pay Edit to the Nizak and to pay Benoni to the Balchov. It's basically what he has in hand. We're going to look at the properties he has in hand. So here, if he only has one class of property in hand, whether that's the Edit the best, Benoni the middle, or Zibit the worst, everybody gets paid out of that property because that's the only property that he has. Hayelo Edit to Benoni Viziborit. If he has all three types of property, then is Zakim Be'idit, the one who's coming to collect damages, gets out of the best of his property. Balcho Be'benonit, the creditor, collects out of his middle-range property. Tubat Isha Be'ziborit, and the woman collecting on her tubah gets to take out of the ziborit. Iditu Be'nonit, if he only has Iditu Be'nonit, then is Zakim Be'idit, the damage is taken out of the Idit. Balcho Be'tubat Isha Be'benonit. than the woman and the creditor take out of the Beinonit, because that's the lowest property that he has. Beinonit v'ziborit. What happens if he has middle range property and low end quality property? Nizakim u'balchov v'beinonit. The damages and the creditor collect out of the middle range property, the balchov, because that's his din to take out of Beinonit. The nizak, because he's entitled to edit, but there is no edit, so he gets the next best, which is Beinonit. Da'atisha b'ziborit. And the Tuberisha gets it out of the Ziborit. Idit b'ziborit, if he only has best quality and lowest quality property, Nizakim b'idit, the Nizak gets out of the Idit, which is his standard collection. Ubalchov uktubat isha b'ziborit. And the creditor and the isha can only go to Ziborit, because we're not going to upgrade the creditor to Idit. We have to downgrade him to Ziborit. Now, Ktani miha, mitzia. In the middle case here, which is really the last case in the previous Amud, Beinonit b'ziborit. If the guy only has middle range property and low end property. So Nizakin u'balchov b'beinonit, the Nizak and the creditor get to take out of the middle range property. Da'atisha b'ziborit. Now what exactly, how can you ever have middle range property and low end property? If that's the only property he has, then by definition on a relative scale, the Beinonit property he has is Edit. That's the best property that he has. How can you ever have middle range property and low end property if it's all determined by the Mazik himself? Wait a minute, if that's the case, then his middle range property is his best property. That should turn into Edit. And then the Balchov should be able to collect out of that Beinonit, and we'll have to push him down to the Ziborit. Or in essence, there can never be a case of Beinonit and Ziborit, because as soon as Beinonit and Ziborit, the Beinonit really is Edit, because it's the best of his property. And then you still have the Ziborit. How can you have a level of Beinonit without having any Edit level if it's Bishlo Shamim? So that Gemara here would conclude that Bishel Olam Shamim, which is against the conclusion that we just brought before from Rabbi Abba, who says that Bishlo Hein Shamim. Halacha Ma'askin, and the Gemara says that's not a problem. We can answer like this. Kon Shaitalo Edit Umachra. He had originally three levels of property. He had Edit, Beinonit, and Ziborit. And then he sold out his Edit. So when he sold out his Edit, we're not going to say then all of a sudden the Beinonit upgrades to Edit, which you could have imagined saying. Once he sells out his Edit, now his best property that's left is this Beinonit. But no, what we say is if he already had three different qualities of property, and then he sold something out of the stack, we don't rearrange the stack anymore. It remains the way it was. So he had Edit, Beinonit, and Ziborit. He sold off the Edit. The Beinonit and Ziborit remained that. Beinonit and Ziborit. So therefore, it could be Bishaloh and Shamin, and it still could be Beinonit in Ziborit. That makes sense. When it says over here that if he only has Beinonit Ziborit, Nizakim beBeinonit, Bachol b'Ktuvat Isha b'Ziborit. Wait a minute. We have another brayta that seems to indicate when it comes to a case like this, where he has Beinonit and Ziborit, that the Nizak gets out of the Beinonit, and the Ktuvat Isha and Balchov get out of the Ziborit. Kashin Adodi. Wait a minute, that's a stira in the Brayta. One Brayta says the Balchov gets out of the Beinonit. One Brayta saying the Balchov gets out of the Ziborit. Elav Shmamina, Kushayit Alo Yidit Umachra. Kan Shloit Alo Yidit Umachra. So the difference will be whether he had previously better quality property or not. If he previously had better quality property, then he has now Edit, was there, he sold it, but what remains is Beinonit and Ziborit. Therefore, the Baal Chov gets out of the Beinonit, so does the Nizak, and the woman gets out of the Ziborit. On the other hand, if all he had all along was Beinonit and Ziborit, which in essence means, in the world standard, he has Beinonit and Ziborit, then his Beinonit turns into Edit. And for that reason, the Nizak gets out of that property, the Beinonit property, but the Baal Chov will have to be downgraded to Ziborit, because there's no more Beinonit over here. The Beinonit upgrades to Edit. Because it upgrades to Edit, the Baal Chov and the Isha are dropped down to Ziborit. So the explanation in the steer and the bright, though, is exactly the answer that we gave, which is, yes, Bishalo Hein Shamin, we do determine it based on his relative property, but you have to look at that not just at the single moment that we're taking a look at it, you have to look at it in the context of what he's owned. If he's owned higher quality property, then what he has left is Beinonit and Ziborit. If he never owned higher quality property, then this Beinonit is the highest quality property he ever had, and therefore it is Edit. And it'll be the equivalent of Edit and Ziborit. Okay, we're going to stop here. 16 lines down on the top of Chet Amud Aleph.